Alors, je reprends donc mon anecdote. J'étais hier à la maison et je dis à ma fille que j'allais ce soir écouter un collègue parler d'un joueur de hockey célèbre et elle me dit « Ah oui, Boris Richard! » Alors, je n'avais jamais parlé de ni Boris Richard ni Maurice Richard à la maison et je croyais que ma fille ne connaissait du hockey que les blessures que j'en rapportais le mercredi soir après mon match. Et pas du tout, j'ai vu que l'école avait fait son travail et qu'elle avait transmis à la génération qui suit la nôtre les valeurs et les valeurs de courage qui sont celles que transporte notamment Maurice Richard. Le conférencier de ce soir est certainement aussi connu que Maurice Richard.
Sans aucun doute.
On le voit partout, il est directeur scientifique des presses de l'Université de Montréal, directeur de du département des littératures de langue française de l'Université de Montréal, professeur au même département, bien entendu, spécialiste de Diderot, c'est un 18e-iste. Enfin, il fait beaucoup, beaucoup de choses, comme vous le savez. Il a écrit de nombreux livres sur Diderot, sur Maurice Richard, sur Bangkok, sur le courrier électronique. J'ai mis une partie de ses œuvres complètes sur la table que vous pourrez consulter. Il va donc venir ce soir dans le cadre du programme d'études sur le Québec présenter une conférence sur le Rocket. Donc je vous laisse à son agréable compagnie. Vous verrez qu'il est aussi fin causeur que Diderot. Donc la conférence dont vous voyez le titre, Don Cherry was right for once, Maurice Richard as Canadian Hero. Benoît Melançon, merci d'être là.
Merci Pascal. Pascal just said it. I published a book about Maurice Richard in 2006 in French. There was a slightly expanded edition in 2008 and an English translation in 2009. And I would like to say a few words about how this book came to be before speaking about Maurice Richard as Canadian hero. The book came out in 2006, but actually I started researching that book 30 years ago. I was a grad student at the University of Montreal, and I was asked by my former thesis director to do some research about an obscure debate about Quebec writers. And while researching that topic, I stumbled upon an article by Louis Chantigny that was called Une fin tragique pour le Rocket, a tragic ending for the Rocket. That article, that newspaper article, described Maurice Richard's death. It was published in 1959. He wasn't dead, of course. He was still an active player. But Louis Chantigny decided to describe Maurice Richard in his dying days as a mythological figure. He was compared to Greek gods. So I took that article, I put it aside saying, someday I have to write something about this very weird newspaper article. So that was in the beginning of the 1980s. And in my mind, what I would do with that article and other texts I had found was to try and make sense of what Maurice Richard meant in Quebec. And my first impression was that it meant a lot for Francophones, and that I would have to deal mainly with written sources in French. That was my first mistake. Of course, when you deal with Maurice Richard, you have to deal with Anglophone stories about Maurice Richard, and this is what I'll try to describe tonight. Maurice Richard, in my mind, is a Canadian hero, legend, icon, superstar. I'll try to make sense of all these words later on. So that was my first mistake. The second mistake was I thought I would work mainly with written sources. I would deal with poems, novels, newspaper articles. Actually, you can't do that kind of work only with written sources. You have to deal with advertisements. You have to deal with movies, sculptures, paintings, comic strips. Maurice Richard is everywhere. So this is what I decided to do, and my book came out as a cultural history of Maurice Richard because I'm dealing with different kinds of material. And I will use that kind of material tonight to try and show you why Maurice Richard is so important in the Canadian world. I'll start by pretending that at least one person in this room doesn't know who Maurice Richard is. So I'll just say a few words rapidly to present Maurice Richard, and then I'll get to the matter at hand. So who was Maurice Richard? He was born on August 4, 1921. He died on May 27, the year 2000. He was a hockey player, played right wing for the Montreal Canadiens for all his career, 18 seasons. So these are his stats. 1,111 games. You see his points, including playoffs, and his penalty minutes. I won't discuss tonight the very touchy subject of Maurice Richard's violence. He was violent, this is very clear, but I won't deal with this tonight unless you ask me questions afterwards, and we'll see. He only won a personal trophy once in his career. He was named the most valuable player in the National Hockey League in 1947. This is the only time he won something by himself. The other times, he won the Stanley Cup with his team, but he never won, for example, the scoring title. Never happened. This is a list of the players who are the all-time greats of the Montreal Canadiens. That's a list that was made in 1985. A bunch of journalists were asked, who were the greatest players of the Montreal Canadiens? And actually, you have five players from the modern era. And this is why Aurel Joliat is into parentheses. He was from the former era, from the ancient history of the Canadiens. And you see, of course, that Maurice Richard is one of those legendary players from the Canadiens. The Hockey News, which is a journal devoted to hockey, made his all-star team in 1988. Those are the greatest players of all hockey, not only from the Canadiens, but all of the National Hockey League history. And you see that Maurice Richard is there with Gretzky, Hoare, Gordie Howe, Mario Lemieux. So it's obvious that he's a great hockey player, not only a great player for the Canadiens. He died in the year 2000, and he had state funeral in Montreal, which is something quite amazing if you think about it, for a hockey player. These are two pictures that were taken when he died. The one on the right-hand side is the day he lied in state at the then Molson Center. 115,000 people walked by his open casket that day. People were circling around the Molson Center for hours. And this is the day of his funeral. It was, of course, broadcasted both in French and in English, on the TV, on radio. There were numerous newspaper specials about this death and what it meant for first Francophones, but also Anglophones. And if you were to study these two events, if you were to read the material that was published either on the 31st of May or the 1st of June, and if you were to read material in French, you would think that Maurice Richard is only a Francophone hero. He was related only to the history of Quebec, the history of Montreal Canadiens, but the history of Quebec in general. But then, if you were to look elsewhere, you would have totally different readings of Maurice Richard. Hence my title of tonight, and here's Don Cherry. That he was quoted on the first page of the Calgary Herald on June the 1st, 2000. People in Quebec loved the Rocket, but he was our hero too. So he's not only a hero for Francophones. This is a quote that is quite interesting, that is not very stunning. The next one is very strange. It comes from Pat Quinn. Maurice Richard was a symbol. We have a little problem with the computer, but Pascal was supposed to handle this. Maurice Richard was a symbol of struggle to all Canadians, not just Quebecers. For my generation, he symbolized the desire to get out from under the British flag, that we were no longer a colony and that we had to stand on our own as a country. He made us proud to be Canadian. I don't have many quotes like this. This is really a one-time thing, but this is very interesting to see that someone would think of Maurice Richard as the person who helped him and the country around him to get out from under the British flag. Third quote, and this is my last one, this comes from Lawrence Martin. He's a journalist from Southern News. He wrote both a biography of Jean Chrétien and a biography of Mario Lemieux, so it shows that he has very wide interests. And when Maurice Richard died, he wrote in this column, outside of Quebec, Richard is not seen, nor was he ever seen, as a symbol of solitude. So he's not someone only related to the Francophones. He's also a hero, legend, myth for all Canadians. In that same article, Lawrence Martin does something that nobody did, has ever done before nor afterwards. He compares Maurice Richard to Pierre-Éliott Trudeau. No one in French dares to do such comparisons. And what I'm trying to understand now is how come Maurice Richard is so important for Anglophones as he is for Francophones. And what I'll do is I'll show you a series of pictures of different texts movies, books, advertisements, songs, one in French and one in English. And I'll just try and show you what kind of text, what kind of material exists about Maurice Richard in English, and what meaning people are trying to give to Maurice Richard, both in French and in English. So I will use material culture, and I will compare two different sets of examples. This is one of the official pictures of Maurice Richard. So this was taken by the Montreal Canadiens Hockey Club. You see Maurice Richard, good grandfather that he is, not violent at all. No, he's now a good grandfather, reading to his granddaughters. You have the name of the granddaughters in the legend of the photo. He's reading that book, Un bon exemple de ténacité, Maurice Richard raconté aux enfants. Of course, that book first came out in English. The Value of Tenacity, the story of Maurice Richard, was first published in English, and then it was translated into French. This is a story of determination. When you want to succeed, you can succeed if you have enough tenacity. It's very interesting to read the book. It was published in the early 80s. It's very interesting to read it today because you have this character that I like a lot, which is Maurice Richard's hockey stick. In French, he's called claque, and in English, he's called flapper. And he gives advice to Maurice Richard. He tells Maurice Richard what to do. He is good spirit, and he explains, you know, if you want to succeed, this is what you should do, and there are things you shouldn't do. You should, of course, respect your parents. It's very important in the book. This is a book meant for children. You won't see it from where you sit, but on the bedside table, there is another book about Maurice Richard that is also very well known, and this is Le Chandail d'Hockey by Roch Carrier. This is a short story that was first published in French under the title Abominable Feuille d'Érable sur la Glace, in which the young character, by mistake, receives a jersey from the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he's forced to wear his hockey jersey on the ice against a full team of Maurice Richard players. All the young boys are wearing number 9 sweater from the Montreal Canadiens, and because his mother doesn't speak well English, she made a mistake and she ordered the wrong sweater from Edens. Of course, this was translated into English, and the title of the translation is The Hockey Sweater. So this is the book you see on the bedside table. This is probably the most often used pair of books in the teaching of French in Canada. Usually when I do this with a large crowd of students, I ask them who had to read in school either Le Chandail d'Hockey, immersion French, or The Hockey Sweater, and everybody raises his or her hand. This is the most well-known text about Maurice Richard. I will come back to this later because we will see what the Canadian government decided to do with such an important part of our heritage. So these are books for children trying to explain that Maurice Richard is the best example you can have if you want to succeed first in hockey, but of course in life in general. This is a book by Andrew Putnick that was published in 2006, and it's a book about It's written, Hockey and the Culture of a Country. Everything's made the same way. You have one picture on one page and one small text on the other page. And it describes a number of things that are part of the Canadian culture of hockey. You have an article about rent a goaler, and you have a picture of the rented goalie on the other page. You have a page about chiclets, the teeth that you lose playing hockey. So you have teeth on one side and a text on the other side. And, of course, you have a text about Roch Carrier. And I quote this part, was it written so short a time ago? The book is from 1979. Yes, but it has become such an important part of our collective spirit, and this is what interests me in that quote, our collective spirit, that it's as though its essence were written long before the words were set down on paper. So if you want to describe a Canadian Saturday night, if you want to find one book that describes what is hockey, this is the book you take. You take The Hockey Sweater by Roch Carrier. These are not the only books that were published for children. I'll show you three pair of books, children's books, three of them, first published in English and then translated into French, and the three of them after Maurice Richard's death. So I'm not speaking about Maurice Richard when he was a player and when he was successful and when he was popular and when people knew him. What I'll try and show you here is that he is still today used as a model. So this first series This first book is called That's Aki. It was published in 2002 in Victoria, and the translation is Ça, c'est du hockey. And actually, the story is the same as Roch Carrier's. You have a team of young people today, all wearing number 9 jerseys. You see it on the top picture. So this is one example. Another example is the hockey card, also published first in English and then translated into French. Those two stories are very similar, and they do something very important to understand what is Maurice Richard today, both in French and in English. They are based on family traditions. Both tell stories of a family investing memories of Maurice Richard. In the first case, it's a mother with her daughter, and in the second case, it's an uncle with his nephew. And they are really saying, this is the heritage I'm transmitting to you. This is what I'm giving to you. I'm giving to you Maurice Richard. So both these books were published first in English and translated, and this is the same case with this one. In English, The Rocket, in French, Maurice Rocket Richard. The last one was published in 2009 or 2010. So we are still seeing books being written about Maurice Richard and aimed at children. And I'll come back to your daughter in a few minutes. With this picture, this is a little booklet. It's about 16 pages long that teaches students today in Montreal to read. So when you're first grade and you want to learn how to read, this is one of the books you use. This is in a series where there are no historical figures. The only historical figure is Maurice Richard. And that book was published in the year 2000, and it is still used to this day because my sons came back from school with this book in their bag saying, Dad, I want to read. I want to learn how to read. And they learn how to read by learning the story of Boris Richard, like you said earlier. You can learn to speak French and to read in French with Maurice Richard. You can also learn to speak English. So this is also one of my sons in his English class, came back one day saying, look, I have to read this little text about the famous knight Maurice Richard was so tired. He didn't think he would be able to play, but still he managed to play, and he scored 5 goals, and he had 3 assists, and the Canadians won 9-2. That was on December 28, 1944. And this is material that is used today in schools in Montreal to learn how to speak English. The irony of the thing is that this is produced by the Canadians and sold to the schools. So they're not giving away their heritage, they're selling their heritage, and this is how people learn to speak English in schools. There are comic strips, of course, about Maurice Richard. See, I'm always doing the same thing, one thing in English, another in French. This was a comic strip published in 1974 on the Volée la Coupe Stanley. So this is the kind of thing that people know when you discuss with francophones. They say, well, I know that comic strip, I saw that. Maurice Richard is shown 2 or 3 or 4 times, even though this is not his team. This isn't the 1970s team, but he appears 3 times because of the riot. And I'll come back, of course, to the riot in a few minutes. But Maurice Richard was not only depicted in comic strips in French, he was also depicted in English and in the States. So the first picture here is Bill Stern's sports book, where you have a few pages that tell the story of Maurice Richard's life. And this is back in 1950. And this is very interesting because this is one of the very few instances where you see Maurice Richard doing something else than playing hockey. In all the books about Maurice Richard, he's a very good hockey player. He has lots of tenacity. He's obsessed with scoring goals. But you very rarely see him doing anything else. In this comic strip, you see him work. He's actually making his own hockey sticks. He's in his shop and he's working wood to turn a piece of wood into a hockey stick. So that was 1952, and this is 1950, also in the U.S. This was published in the magazine called Babe Ruth Comic Book, something like that. In 3 pages, also, people are describing the story of Maurice Richard. And both these examples are from the early 50s. So it was very clear already then that Maurice Richard was such a star that you would have to feature him alongside other famous pictures, because in the first book you have a series of other sports figures, and Maurice Richard is important enough to be featured alongside these figures in the 50s. Let's get to poetry. I'm just mixing my examples. Some things are from high culture, others from, let's say, lower manifestations of culture. This book, Les Poètes chanteront ce but, was published in 1991 by Bernard Pousier. It's a series of poems about hockey and the Canadians. There are a number of poems about Maurice Richard, who signed the book à Bernard, de Maurice Richard. So Bernard Pousier actually met him. The title is very interesting because Les Poètes chanteront ce but was a sentence that came from a radio description of a hockey game. On February 3rd, 1945, Maurice Richard scored one of his famous goals carrying a player on his back. He was carrying Earl Siebert from the Detroit Red Wings, 200 pounds. He was carrying him. He scored. And the radio host, Michel Normandin, said on the radio, "Et les poètes chanteront ce but." So this is what you have here. Radio is very important in every story about Maurice Richard. You have to realize that Maurice Richard started to play in 1942. Television appeared in 1952, but the games were not broadcasted in their entirety before the end of the 1950s. You would have snippets of games before, but never a complete game. And when you look at people's souvenirs of Maurice Richard, what they remember is Maurice Richard on the radio. Ken Dryden, who is fighting to keep his seat in this series of elections in Toronto, wrote an article once about Roch Carrier, of course. Everybody talks about Roch Carrier. He wrote a story saying there never was a bad hockey game played on the radio. All hockey games on the radio are great. And in the souvenirs, this is always what you find. You have very little souvenirs from TV. People remember what they heard. Roch Carrier, in another book, not in the hockey sweater, has depictions of Maurice Richard lying on the ice like Jesus Christ, bleeding. He never saw anything of that. He just invented that from what he heard on the radio. So Bertrand Pousier is one of the many poets who had texts about Maurice Richard. So does Al Purdy. Al Purdy wrote the very best poem ever written about hockey. It's called Hommage to Richard. This is a very, very strange poem because in the French poetry, you usually would find, it's the same with the French songs, you always find the same events. They're always telling the same stories. The night of December 28, 1944, after the moving. The night he scored 5 goals, got the 3 stars in March of 1944. So there are always the same stories being transmitted from one poem or one song to the other. Al Purdy doesn't do that. Al Purdy starts his poem by frog music in the night, which, of course, is not exactly what you would have said to Maurice Richard's face. The word frog for him was the ultimate insult, and he would have been real mad. And in this poem, Purdy mixes hockey, of course, with Napoleon. Are you able to do this? He's able to mix hockey stories with Napoleon, Marie Antoinette, working class fellows in the East End of Montreal. This is a very interesting poem because it takes Richard and it sets him in a totally different decor from what you usually see in poetry. Drama now. And what I want to show here is how the same question can be asked, both in French and in English, at exactly the same time, with different answers. Un pays dont la devise est Je m'oublie de Jean-Claude Germain was published in 1976. And it's one of the things it is. It's a reflection about the difference between myth and history. What is something mythical and what is something historical? And what better example to discuss that than to use Maurice Richard? So what Jean-Claude Germain does, he takes Maurice Richard and he makes him talk to Louis Cyr. We see that famous strong man from the early 20th century. They never met. Louis Cyr died in 1912, and Maurice Richard was born in 1921. That's not the issue. The issue is you take two historical figures, important historical figures, and you contrast them. You oppose them to see. I have a little problem with my microphone. You oppose them so to make sense of both ways in which they are important figures. And in the book, it's very clear that Louis Cyr is history. He's history because he's past. He was important in his time. You still, to this day, can see one statue of Louis Cyr. It's in front of the Home Depot in Lower Montreal. So I'm going to try and fix this. So Louis Cyr was an important figure during his life, but then he was forgotten. And he has this dialogue with Maurice Richard, and he says, well, I've been forgotten, but you will never be forgotten. I'm history, you're myth. A myth is something that is never forgotten, and that lasts forever. So this is one of the questions Jean-Claude Germain asks in Un pays dont la devise est je m'oublie in 76. In 77, Rick Salatin comes from Toronto, comes to make a play at the Centaur Theatre in Montreal. It's called Les Canadiens, with an assist by Ken Dryden. He asks exactly the same question, and that's 1977. So that's the year after Jean-Claude Germain. What is history? What is myth? He comes up with a totally different answer. He doesn't at all have the answer that Jean-Claude Germain has, but to illustrate his answer, he uses, again, Maurice Richard. The play is divided in two parts. The first part is about Maurice Richard mainly, and the second part is about November 15, 1976, when the Parti Québécois was first elected. But you see, people coming from two totally different backgrounds, Jean-Claude Germain from Montreal, Salatin from Toronto, at the very same time ask the very same question, and to provide an answer, use the same figure, which is Maurice Richard. The novel also shows Maurice Richard in numerous ways. Jacques Poulain wrote a book in 1970, which was called Le Cœur de la Baleine Bleue, in which novel you have a hockey player describing the players he plays against and the players from the past. And you have a long passage about Maurice Richard. He's compared, as usual, to Gordie Howe, which is the usual comparison that you find. But Jacques Poulain came back to Maurice Richard last year in his latest novel, L'Anglais n'est pas une langue magique, where you have two characters, two brothers, and one is related, is compared to Maurice Richard, and the other one to Henri Richard, his brother. In Jean-François Chassé's Les Taches Solaires, from 2006, you have a passage during the riot of 1955. I'm coming to it in a minute. And this is the defining moment in the family's history. You will see that theme of the family coming back all over again. This is how Maurice Richard has been transmitted. He's a family man. He's a familiar picture, figure that you transmit from one generation to the other. I just took two examples, but there are many novels featuring Maurice Richard. There's one very interesting from 1956 by Eugène Cloutier called Les Inutiles. It's not interesting because it's a good novel. The novel is not very good. It's interesting because in 1956, Maurice Richard is called for the first time a myth. People say it in 1956. Already, he was still an active player, and people still think that he was, already thought that he was a myth. So these are a few examples in French. You have very interesting examples in English. The one that interests me the most is the one is Mordecai Richler. Mordecai Richler was a fan of Maurice Richard from the beginning, and you see Maurice Richard appearing in his essays. He's describing games, he's describing the forum, he's describing what it was to be in Montreal while Maurice Richard was an active player. So that's in his essays, but it's in his novels you have the same thing, especially, you know, the picture is really too small, you don't see it, in Barney's Version. If you remember the opening scene of the Barney's Version, there is the wedding of Barney Panofsky to his second wife. We'll never know her name. She's already only called the second Mrs. Panofsky. The wedding takes place at the Ritz, and there it's during a hockey game. And the character doesn't want to be with his wife. He wants to be at the bar and have the score. And when this book, the book was re-released recently because of the movie that was made, and you see a picture of Maurice Richard on the cover. So it's really a little part of the story, but of the narrative, but it's put on the cover. John Farrell, this is a very strange novel. I have to admit I wasn't able to finish it. He wrote a series of mystery novels, City of Ice, and his latest book was never published in English, as far as I can tell. In French, it's called La Dague de Cartier, and it mixes Jacques Cartier and the riot of 1955. It's very, very strange and very, very boring. But you have, see, in novels, both in French and in English, the same figure. You have biographies of Maurice Richard, of course. This is the most famous biography. It was published in 1976 by Jean-Marie Pellerin. This is a nationalistic take on Maurice Richard. C'est l'idole d'un peuple. So you have really a reading that makes of Maurice Richard the ultimate French-Canadian. And but there are other biographies, like the one I showed you earlier for students in first grade. And this one just came out. I have it here. It's by Charles Foran. It was published 6 weeks ago. And what is interesting in my mind is the fact that in the first case, you have Maurice Richard as a French-Canadian hero. And in the second case, you have Maurice Richard featured in a series, and you see it on the side, of extraordinary Canadians. So he is a figure of identification for Francophones. This is what we're told in 1976 and then in 1988 because there's a second version of the book. And he's the ultimate Canadian also in this new biography. It's very interesting to see the differences in the way people read Maurice Richard. I'll just say a few words about Foran's book. There are two or three very striking things in his book. One is the fact that he's obsessed with religion. There are things said about the fact that Quebec was religious about every page in the biography. He tries to understand how Maurice Richard fitted in that religious context of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. It's something you very rarely see in French. People in French, when they speak about Maurice Richard, I've done some research on this, they take for granted that he was a religious man. He had to be. He had to be a good Catholic father. He had to attend church. This went without saying. In Foran's book, you have a totally different take. He really tries to explain how he is related to his larger society. There's also one other thing, and I'll leave it at that, about this book that is interesting, is the fact that Charles Foran repeatedly comes back to the war. And he tries to explain that Maurice Richard wanted to fight during the Second World War, but it was turned down. In my research, I had found that he had been turned down twice. According to Foran, he was turned down three times. But he's trying to show that he was dedicated to his country, that he was not one of those French Canadians who didn't want to fight during the Second World War. He wanted to fight, but he was turned down because he was too weak, which is, of course, the irony of the thing. He had been injured quite often at the beginning of his career, and people thought that he was too fragile and he wouldn't make it in the army. And this is a way of reading Maurice Richard that is only present, or almost only present, in Anglophone writing. This is a thing that people really barely touch in French, but this is a way to bring back Maurice Richard, in a way, to the forefront of some form of Canadian nationalism. He was ready to fight for his country. There are, of course, movies. That one is the most famous because it was made recently. One of the three movies, actually, with Roy Dupuis. Roy Dupuis has made a career of personifying Maurice Richard. And this, I'll come back to it later. This is a very interesting movie. It's called in French La Vie Après Le Hockey, in English Life After Hockey. And I will come back to it because it features Maurice Richard in a very interesting way, and especially with regards to religious issues. And now let's turn our attention for a minute to the riot of 1955. I usually use that picture because you see here Clarence Campbell, the bad guy in the story, being attacked at the Montreal Forum on March 17, 1955. I like to use that picture because Maurice Richard owned that picture and had it in his living room. So Maurice Richard, to his death, was living with the picture of Clarence Campbell in that scene. So I just to refresh your memory, on March 13, 1955, there was a game in Boston. Maurice Richard was hurt. He was cut. He had a cut to the head. He started to bleed. He got mad. He got real mad. He got mad with the player that attacked him, Hal Leiko. And then stories vary. There were no pictures. That part of the game was not televised. So we don't have any pictures of what really happened. We know that he used a stick. He used his stick to hit Hal Leiko. And later on in 1952, he would write a book saying, well, of course, I hit him with a stick. I had to use my stick. I mean, I was attacked all the time, so I had to use my stick. This is what I did. But then you say, you read certain stories, and people say, well, he had his stick, broke it on Hal Leiko's back, and then he went and fetched a second hockey stick. He was real mad. But then you have other stories. He went and fetched a third hockey stick. And the latest version I found is four hockey sticks. The truth of the story is not really that important here. What is important is the way that people tell this story, the way people try to make more and more of that event. Over time, people are adding layers in that narrative. So he fought with Hal Leiko, and then afterwards he fought with a referee, and Clarence Campbell afterwards decided to suspend him for the three remaining games of the regular season. This was the first time in his career that he was leading the scoring title. He could have won it that year, but he was suspended for the last three regular games of the season, and he was suspended also for the playoffs. That was on March 16, 1955, and then on March 17, there was this important event in the story of Quebec, modern Quebec, the riot. I won't get into too much detail about the riot. I'd just like to stress two things that are important in my mind. One is the fact that people tell this story as if it were a war scene. People left the forum because there was a tear gas bomb that exploded, and people went on a rampage and they destroyed window cases, cars, trash cans. Of course, it was a riot. It's true. It really happened, and there really was some violence involved that night. One story that is never... Actually, there are two stories that are never told. One story is the fact that that was St. Patrick's Day. So it was also a party. And it's obvious by a certain number of stories that people actually, probably just at the beginning of the night, but maybe afterwards, were enjoying themselves. You have pictures of people dancing in the streets. They are really having a good time. This is a story that you never see anywhere. It was war. The other story you never see or barely see is the fact that if you read accounts today of the riot, you would have the feeling that there were only Francophones in the streets that night, which, of course, wasn't true. There were Anglophones also on St. Catherine Street in front of the forum for the riot. You have people trying to explain to you, there's one documentary very interesting in that regard, you have people trying to explain to you that there were only Francophones, and they're interviewing Anglophones who were there, who are describing in English the fact that they were involved in the riot. Try cancel. So there were also Anglophones. That's what I've been trying to explain since the very beginning. Maurice Richard was a hero to Anglophones as well. He was a hockey player, and that was not the nationalist emblem that had been suspended. Maurice Richard, the hockey player, had been suspended, and his Montreal fans were mad. There are numerous writings about Maurice Richard, there are about the riot. There are pictures, there are movies, you have bits of radio depictions, and you have songs. This is something I just added this afternoon, that's why I forgot. That was posted at 2 o'clock this afternoon on a site called Le Printemps Canadien. You have many journalists from Radio-Canada describing the series. And it starts by Ce qui s'est passé au forum ce soir-là allait au-delà du sport. L'émeute du 17 mars 1955 a vraiment tout changé entre les Canadiens français et les anglophones à Montréal. This is today's version of what happened that night. That was between the Francophones and the Anglophones. It was between Maurice Richard and Clarence Campbell. And people would go farther, and I won't go into this because it's a bit complicated, but people would go as far as saying, this is when the Quiet Revolution started. I don't believe that at all, but Let's leave it at that. Songs. A very few days after the riot, a first song came out in English. And I haven't, you're laughing and I haven't sung yet. Just wait. A Scotsy Fool released a song in March of 1955. So a few days after the riot, there was a song that came out. It was based on a folk song, so he used music that already existed, and he put on that music lyrics depicting the riot. So this is the song that goes, Saint-Maurice Richard, qui score tout le temps. Of course, you go for the kill. You have only a few days to prepare the song, so you prepare it like that. This song is quite well known. There are even parodies of that song that were made in the year 2000. But there was also a song in English by Bob Hill and his Canadian country boys, The Saga of Maurice Richard. I'm not as good at singing that one. They both tell the same story. They both explained that Maurice Richard is sorry for what happened, that Campbell is the bad guy, but that Maurice Richard will come back the year afterwards to help his team win the Stanley Cup. They say exactly the same thing. They work the same way. Scott Tifo used a folk song in French and added lyrics on top of the song. And Bob Hill did the same thing. He took an Irish song and he added words depicting the riot. The difference is that Bob Hill describes Clarence Campbell at length. He's not very well depicted in Scott Tifo's song, but he is depicted in the other one. Says Campbell, young man, that stick in your hand has put you in trouble by gar. Though you need 5 stitches, you're too big for your britches. Just who you think that you are. Now you've done this before, and you've made me quite sore. And although you are a great star, you're true for the year. Do I make myself clear, Mr. Maurice the Rocket Richard? It was released at exactly the same time. It wasn't released in 1956 or 1957. It was released as a Scott Tifo song in March of 1955. So you see, there were maybe two different publics for Maurice Richard, but they were living in the same space. They were describing the same events. They were outraged, both. You know, it's too bad he was expelled. Of course, he will come back next year and help his team. So there are a number of depictions of the riot, a number of stories made from starting from the riot, but this is, I think, in my mind, very important to realize that there are stories, both in French and English, saying in the same conditions about the same thing. I'm also into songs, and I really like that picture, so I really wanted to show it to you. She's especially good-looking and black like this. That was in 1988. Maurice Richard was very sick. That was at the Molson Center. He was sitting on top in a loge up there, and she was singing for him. Afterwards, they both cried. I like this because Maurice Richard used to cry a lot, which is something that doesn't fit well with this, you know, story of determination, tenacity, obsession. You know, I want to score. Jean-Claude Germain in his play has Maurice Richard saying this, moi dans vie tout ce que je veux, c'est scorer, scorer, scorer. But he cries. So you have Céline Dion, and of course you have Shania Twain. She's not wearing a string. I saw the actual costume. This is not a string. But what is she wearing? Canadian sweater, number 9, red, white, and blue. I have the pictures in color, but I find them nicer side by side in black and white. That was at one of the Juno Awards ceremony in 2003. She decided to honor one of the great hockey players, and of course that was Maurice Richard. See, both sides of the linguistic barrier, let's put it that way, you have people trying to use Maurice Richard's status to say something about, in one case, Quebec culture, and the other one, about Canadian culture. The state played an important role in making Maurice Richard who he is today. And by state, I mean the Canadian state. Maurice Richard has been put on a stamp. So this is the government who decides that he would be put on a stamp. This is for the 50th anniversary of the All-Star Game. There were six players, three from the Montreal Canadiens, and of course, Maurice Richard is there. This is the same picture from that stamp. And last year, there were a series of stamps for the 100th anniversary of the Canadiens. They released a series of stamps, and the sweater they used was Maurice Richard's sweater. So you have the Canadian state considering Maurice Richard important enough to be put on a stamp, or his sweater to be put on a stamp, first for the All-Star Game and now for the anniversary. Of course, it's an authentic Maurice Richard jersey. But the state also organized something else, which is quite interesting, and it's this exhibit that traveled from coast to coast about Maurice Richard. When Maurice Richard died in the year 2000, his family, a bit afterwards, decided to sell his collection of memorabilia. He had collected all kinds of stuff over his life, including that picture of Clarence Campbell I showed you earlier. And his family decided that they would rather sell this than keep it in the family. Of course, there was outrage at the mere fact that such an important collection for our tradition could be lost. So the Quebec Ministry of Culture decided to classify about 40-something, a little more than 40 objects from that collection. They said these artifacts cannot be sold outside of Canada. They have to be sold to Canadians. But as we all know, Quebec government doesn't always have the money it needs, so it asked the Canadian government to buy those 40-something artifacts. So the Canadian Museum of Civilization bought the artifacts, and they organized this traveling exhibition. It was first put up in Gatineau in 2004, and it has been touring the country since. So Maurice Richard has been traveling, and it's an exhibition only about Maurice Richard. It's not about the Canadians, it's not about hockey, it's about Maurice Richard himself. It's called A Legend. And this is where you can see the Shania Twain costume I showed you earlier, because it's part of the exhibition. This is why I know she's not wearing a string. But there's also, don't rush for your pocket, believe me, there's also the $5 bill that we all carry in our pockets. You see someone wearing number 9. Little girl wearing a helmet. I love the helmet. This is so not typical of Maurice Richard. But she's wearing a helmet. She's playing. You have a father showing her his son or daughter to skate. And you have a text. It's very, very, very small. So, of course, you have to read it. The winters of my childhood were long, long seasons. We lived in three places, the school, the church, and the skating rink. But our real life was on the skating rink. These are the opening lines from Roque Carrier's The Hockey Sweater. So we all carry both Roque Carrier and Maurice Richard in our pockets all the time. This is what I mean by the fact that the state is playing an active role in transmitting Maurice Richard as a Canadian figure. You have these stamps, you have this exhibition, and you have this bill that you carry in your pocket. Let's see a few advertisements. Maurice Richard was used for publicity, for different kinds of projects. These are pictures taken from a TV ad about Gratian Formula 16. I always keep a little touch of gray. My wife likes that. There are two different versions, actually. There is one version with women like that, and there was the corrected version with my wife likes that. So this is one example of a publicity where Maurice Richard was used in English. It appeared both in French and English. There's also this example that I quite like, use the Vitalis. My hair shapes up like a league leader after the Vitalis 60-second workout. I can't miss when I take Vitalis. So Maurice Richard was, or people using Maurice Richard were obviously obsessed with his hair. So the first publicity was broadcasted both in French and English. This one is in English, and this is the weirdest piece of my collection. This is in Spanish. Small parentheses. When you try to write a cultural history of a hockey player, you very rapidly face a huge problem. Where will you find your material? Like Pascal said, I'm an 18th century scholar. When I need something from the 18th century, I go to the library. pick up the book and I read it. When I want to find material from material culture from the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, it's very difficult. No one kept that. No one thought in the 40s that the sweater bearing Maurice Richard's face would be worth something someday. Nobody thought that. So actually, I bought that thing. I really bought it. Don't worry, it was very cheap, from someone in Argentina who couldn't tell me a word, first because he didn't speak English or French, but he couldn't tell me either a word because he had taken that page from a magazine because he was selling just pages. And they had put that online saying, well, this is a hockey player, might interest someone. I'm the one, I bought it. But you have, you know, William's Shaving Cream in Spanish. I don't know when it was published. I don't know for what public. I have a guess, but I'm not sure. But this is part of the image that was carried of Maurice Richard. Then you go to clothes. If you find in your cupboards that jacket, keep it. It's worth a fortune today. It was worth $12.99 in 1951, 1952. But no one kept it, of course. It wasn't worth anything. They have one in the exhibition I mentioned earlier, but it's very worn out. So you would buy Maurice Richard's clothes. You would go to Tony the Tailor to get dressed like Maurice Richard. You would wear the alpaca mop coat of champions by Maurice Rocket Richard. These are things that help maintain Maurice Richard's visibility throughout time. This is why we remember Maurice Richard, because he was not only the hockey player or the subject, the topic of books and poems and plays, but he was also shown everywhere for different publicity purposes. That was 2 years ago. You could also buy his last overcoat and suit authenticated. The auction started at $300. This is just to tell you that this is where I did most of my research for material culture. I'm on eBay every day trying to see if there is something new about Maurice Richard that I haven't seen. I think I've seen most of the stuff, but there are still once in a while things like that, or his bowling ball, but that I didn't buy, feel assured. He would also sell batteries. He would sell, of course, skates. These are things very predictable. What's interesting here is the sheer number of products he sold over the years. He started to sell products in the 1940s, and he is still selling things today. He is still selling Invesco Trimark. That was released after Maurice Richard's death. You have Gretzky and Richard. Imaginez deux grands joueurs ensemble. This is how you would sell Maurice Richard in the year 2004, 2005. He's been dead for 5 years. But still, you know, he's a figure from the past that people know and people can identify with. This is an earlier picture that only exists in English that was from a magazine in 1996, The Mark of a Legend. So these are my examples. Let's try and make sense of these examples. Let's see if we can find a way to understand better what Maurice Richard stands for. So why is he so important? Why was he depicted both in French and in English from 1942 until today? On fait un très beau travail d'équipe, hein? Bon. Bon. On faisait un très beau travail d'équipe. Voilà. So why is he important? He was a great hockey player. That's obvious. This is, you need always to remember this because he was transmitted into memory to people who have never seen him play. Remember those 115,000 people who walked in front of his open casket on May 31st, 2000. Many of those, most of those, had never seen him play. But he was described as the ultimate player, and this is how he was transmitted from one generation to the other, this family model I spoke about earlier. So this is obvious, and he was a great hockey player, both for Francophones and Anglophones. This explains partially why he was depicted so often and why he is still, to this day, such an important figure. He also came at the right time, because you have to remember that when he started to play in 1942, the Canadians weren't very good. They hadn't won the Stanley Cup in a number of years, so they were expecting to win it again. And there were no big Francophone stars. In Montreal, there were no huge hockey players at that time. The previous huge hockey player, previous huge hockey figure, was Aoi Morenz, who had died in 1937. He came really at the right time, and he was a total surprise. This is very important to remember also. We know today who will be the great players of tomorrow. There have been already TV depictions of the young guy who is 14 or 15, raised in the same village as Sidney Crosby, and who is supposed to be the next Sidney Crosby. You know it in advance. Everybody knew that Mario Lemieux would be the next great one. Gretzky. Even Jean Béliveau, in a sense, was announced in a way. You knew he would be a great hockey player. Nobody knew that Maurice Richard would be such a great hockey player. He came out of nowhere. He was injured his two first seasons. People thought that he would be too fragile to survive. Rocket Richard is one of his nicknames. Another nickname he added in the 40s was Bones, because his bones were shattered so often. People didn't expect him at all. He came to the Canadiens, and he succeeded right away. He was a star, and his greatest achievements happened when he was very, very young. His greatest year was between 1944 and 1945. He had that 5-goal game against Toronto. He had that 9-point game against Detroit. He had his best ever fight against Bob Killer Dill. He scored he had his first but only 50-goal in a 50-game season in 44-45. He was really totally unexpected. He was really at the right time, at the right place. I would also argue that he was needed. People were looking for heroes. People were looking for legends. But people were looking in different ways. People were looking and are still looking for Canadian heroes. I quote two names here. Peter Newman, the journalist, wrote an article a few years ago that was called "We'd Rather Be Clark Kent." So we don't want to be Superman. Superman is expecting too much of us. Rather than being a superstar, superhero in that case, we'd rather be the journalist who tries to find a telephone booth and change into that figure. That book I mentioned earlier, the Maurice Richard biography by Charles Foran, has been published in that series of Extraordinary Canadians. And this is precisely what John Ralston Saul, who is leading the series, is trying to do. He's trying to build a series of national Canadian heroes. So this has been going on for a while. People in both Canada and Quebec, but in different perspectives, have been looking to ways to create heroes, to create legends. That series project is quite interesting. You have Francophones and Anglophones, men, women. Writers are both Francophones and Anglophones. He's trying to be very balanced, but you see that there is a project clearly there to say, we have a glorious past. And in this glorious past, there is René Lévesque and Pierre-Éliott Trudeau. There is Wilfrid Laurier and Maurice Richard. So this has been going on for a number of years, that need for great historical figures from the past. Of course, you have the same thing in French Canada. When he succeeded Maurice Richard in the 50s, it was unexpected, there were very few stories about success in French Canada. Writers were unknown at best. The economy was ruled by the Anglophone and the Anglophones in Montreal or in the U.S. So there were very few people with whom you can identify. And Maurice Richard was one of those. He succeeded against adversity. And there you could also relate this victory over adversity just to the way Maurice Richard played. You have to remember that Maurice Richard was not, as opposed to today's player, a big man. Maurice Richard was my height and my weight when he started to play in 1942. He wasn't big. He wasn't fast. He wasn't very talented. He was obsessed with scoring, and he worked as hard as he could to succeed. So identification was possible. You could say, well, this is someone who looks like me. He's not very tall. He's not very strong. He lives nearby. He has this little house in Ansick. He doesn't make much money. He's someone like me. He's someone like myself, and he succeeds. So there was a lot of investment, in a way, in Maurice Richard as a French-Canadian hero. That was clear from the 1950s already, and it lasts to this day. Two examples of this need to create heroes or to insert Maurice Richard in the national story. So that was the movie I mentioned earlier. That's a movie from 1989 in English called Life After Hockey. This character, you see, not Maurice Richard, the other one. He's a rat, a rink rat, plays hockey outside. The opening scene, he's skating, and you have this unknown figure, hooded, covered, you don't see who it is. It's Maurice Richard who is watering the rink. And this player, Rink Rat Brown, explains what it meant to be a young boy growing up in Canada at the end of the 50s, at the beginning of the 60s, and trying to find heroes. And what he says is there were two possibilities. You have to remember there were only two Canadian teams in the 40s, 50s, 60s. You were either a Toronto Maple Leafs fan or a Montreal Canadiens fan. And the character explains that there was no way growing up in northern Alberta that he would relate to anyone from Toronto. Those Puritans, no, I wanted magic. I wanted mystic. I wanted aura. So I was a fan of the Montreal Canadiens. So these were his heroes. He was growing up saying, I have made a choice. I had a choice between Toronto and Montreal. I had a choice between Protestants and Catholics. I had a choice between Anglophones and Francophones. And I chose the Montreal Canadiens. So you are in a narrative of the Canadian psyche in a way. He's choosing one over the other. So this is one of those examples where you see really intertwined both decisions you could take, and he took one. I'm coming back to Al Purdy. Al Purdy has this very interesting verse at the end of this poem, Homage to Richard in 76. He made Quebec Canadian. See, you have both choices, both ways to identify yourself with the country, mixed into one verse. He made Quebec Canadian. You have probably Maurice Richard's greatest success in Al Purdy's eyes. He managed to blend the two identities together. I'll conclude very rapidly. I've been trying to show you how similar Maurice Richard has been in the Francophone world and the Anglophone world. I don't want to say that he was exactly the same, that he meant exactly the same. I think there are differences, and this is what I'd like to stress in my final words. He was, obviously, from coast to coast, a cultural icon. This, I think, is obvious just from the sheer number of examples you can muster if you want to compare Maurice Richard in both languages. I've used a number, but I have dozens others. Other songs, other movies, other plays, other poems, other novels. I have way too much of that stuff. He's a cultural icon, that's for sure. I think he is a hero. He is a hockey hero, obviously. He is that figure from a time where you could relate to hockey players. There is no way you can relate to Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky would play a game, he would finish with 2 goals, 4 assists, and you wouldn't have seen him at all because he was so better than the other players. You cannot identify with Zdeno Chara. I don't know why you would, but if you were to try and identify with a player, he's too strong, he's too fast, he's too well-trained, he's making way too much money. This is not the case with someone like Maurice Richard. Identification still worked then. Probably changed, my hypothesis would be that it changed in the 1970s, but that's a different story. But he was both sides of this linguistic barrier I mentioned. He was a hero. I think he was a legend, because people tend to tell the same stories. March 23rd, 1944, he scored 5 goals, he had the 3 stars of the game. On April 8, 1952, he was knocked down in the second period. He came back and he scored a goal. He was unconscious. And you have stories about this is the greatest goal in the story of the universe. I quote, it's a real quote. The greatest goal of the history of the National Hockey League. There are legendary moments in Richard's career that are both the same in French and in English. In my book, I make a list. I have chosen 12 of these moments, but they're always the same. You find them in every story. They are all in Charles Foran's book. In all the biographies, you would say these are the great achievements of Maurice Richard. And people agree on those on both sides. Is he a myth? I think he is a myth in French for Francophones for a very simple reason. He means everything. You can use Maurice Richard in every context and have him mean something. He was very violent when he was a player in his time. Then he quit playing and he turned into this fatherly figure, then grandfatherly figure, that was not at all associated with violence. In 1997, someone needed the best grandfather possible for the International Year of the Family. And, of course, Maurice Richard was chosen. La famille, elle dure quand elle est tendre. So this was Maurice Richard with tenderness, not with violence. So over the years, he changed. His meaning changed. He meant different things at different times for different people. He would be the perfect incarnation of federalism. At one time, he was rumored to be on the short list to be Governor General of Canada, as was Jean Béliveau. It's a good thing he wasn't named. I don't think he would have done such a great thing, such a great job, but he was, you know, the incarnation of Canada. He would have been Governor General of Canada. For others, he's the best possible figure for sovereignty. He is a fierce French-Canadian imposing his will upon those bad Anglophones who are trying to prevent him from succeeding. You could compare him to René Lévesque, which was done at length, and you could compare him, which was not done at length, but was done, with Pierre-Éliott Trudeau. There's a very simple reason for that. Maurice Richard barely spoke. He didn't take stands for lots of things. Actually, the only things he would take stand for are hockey-related. I don't like foreign players. That kind of stuff. Or goalies today are all poor. In my time, goalies were great, which implied that he was a great hockey player because he managed to score against these goalies. But today's goalies are all poor athletes. So in my mind, he can mean about everything in Francophone Quebec. I don't think you can say the same in English. Of course, for political reasons. He cannot be in English Canada the incarnation of sovereignty. Of course, the same way that René Lévesque couldn't be a myth because people are investing in him political meaning and some people refuse that political meaning. And this is, I think, the difference. There are many, many things that relate Maurice Richard to both communities, but in the end, there were a certain number of things he couldn't mean to both those communities. He meant probably more, he was probably more flexible in a way to Francophones than he was to Anglophones. This is probably the only, it was probably the main difference between these two cultures. But otherwise, I think that Don Cherry was right. He is a Canadian hero. Thank you.
Merci Benoît. En dépit de ces problèmes techniques
dont je ne suis pas responsable.
Alors, la question que je me pose, c'est pas comment ma fille a-t-elle pu entendre parler de Maurice Richard à l'école, mais plutôt comment je n'ai pas pu, moi, ou comment j'ai oublié que j'en avais entendu parler. Aucun souvenir relié à la lecture d'un tel livre, celui de Rocaille ou d'un autre. Et pourtant, ça a dû se faire. Donc c'est peut-être le propre, justement, des mythes que d'être oublié et d'être complètement assimilé. Ça fonctionne?
Il faut parler dedans, quand même.
Un, deux?
Oui.
Ah,
oui. Oui, c'est fait pour soi.
C'est ça. Is there any questions?
Oui. Moi, je réponds en anglais parce que je suis filmé, donc il faut que je parle anglais quand je suis filmé.
Ben, tout au long de votre présentation, qui était extrêmement intéressante d'ailleurs. Vous avez toujours évité le sujet de la violence de Maurice Richard tout en promettant d'y revenir. Donc évidemment, je vous relance l'invitation, mais en ajoutant finalement une seconde question, c'est-à-dire, vous avez toujours fait la dichotomie entre finalement la perception du Canada anglais et celle du Canada français, et cette violence était-elle perçue de la même manière des deux côtés?
At the end of his career, after he ended his career, he would write columns in newspapers. Every Sunday, he would have his column giving comments about state of hockey, young players, his grandson, that kind of stuff. And one day, he was asked about violence. And he says, well, j'étais violent, mais j'étais pas méchant. So, I was violent, I wasn't mean. And for him, violence was normal. It was part of the way you played hockey. I quoted this earlier. In 1972, he wrote a book with Stan Fischler, and he explains very candidly that he had to fight. That was normal. This is what you do. This is how you play hockey. You fight all the time. And that number of penalty minutes I showed you at the beginning of my presentation was the most important for a number of years. I mean, it took 30 years before someone would have more penalty minutes in the Montreal Canadiens than Maurice Richard. So he was violent. He never denied it. I never used 3 sticks in Boston. Never said that he didn't use 2. So I never used 3. So that's exaggerated. So that was part of who he was, and he very candidly recognized that that was who he was. How do you read this? Of course, if you read this from a Montreal perspective, and I don't mean linguistic, I mean Montreal. He's a Montreal hockey player. If you read it from a Montreal perspective, you would say he was slandered. He was attacked. He was the player that everybody wanted to fight with or injure. So he had to retaliate. He had to defend himself. And this went quite easily. One of the first conferences I gave after I released the book was at the Salon du Livre de Montréal, and there was someone there who came to me. He was furious at the end of the presentations. He was not violent. No way. I knew him. Okay, but he says he was. So I'm just quoting the man. There were reasons that people used to explain why he was so violent in Montreal. When you go out of Montreal, you have a different story. And this is a story that Forens touches on in his book. I call my book in French Les yeux de Maurice Richard, and Les yeux de Maurice Richard, in my mind, is the sign of his determination. You would see in his eyes that he was obsessed with succeeding, with fighting, with scoring goals. But in English Canada, and really almost only in English Canada, and you see it in Forens' book, this look he had, that gaze he had, was related to something totally different. It was madness. So it's not the story of someone who has its biggest quality, tenacity. He is crazy. He is just out of the nut house. I'm quoting. And this you would see only in English. The only time I saw that in French was from Charles Binamé when he made the movie in 2005. He mentioned once something like that. So he had two different ways of reading this. The one that is most important, because this is the one we live with every day, is he was slandered, he had to retaliate. He was defending himself. But you have this other story that appears from time to time saying, well, we were afraid of him because he looked crazy. This is something you don't see very often, but that you do see. There was also another story related to his violence outside of Montreal, was the fact that you could pack an arena because you never knew what would happen. See, he was not someone you can predict that he would go quiet for 1 night, 2 nights, 3 nights. What I try to show in my book is that before he was suspended by Clarence Campbell in March of 1955, he had a very, very long history of bad behavior. And I think, don't attack me. I think Clarence Campbell was right in suspending him for the rest of the season and the playoffs. He had been suspending him for years and years and years. He had been fining him for years and years and years. So people would say, well, let's go and watch a game in Detroit or Chicago or New York. If Rocket Richard is there, something may happen. And the word that people would use to describe that is, he's like a volcano. You never know when he will explode. So around that story, you have, around that aspect of his play, you have different stories. Some are stories you see everywhere, others that are barely uttered in certain instances, but they all complete the same portrait. I mean, they are all based on the same thing. There is something there stronger than his will. There, he will go farther than what you expect. He's that guy that will do something that you cannot predict. And this was part of his appeal when he was a player. Of course, afterwards, it wasn't as good to be as violent, so that's why that people decided to mask that part of him to change the stories. You could read Maurice Richard's life in the book I showed. You could also learn grammar with Maurice Richard. There was a grammar book explaining the numbers in French with Maurice Richard's picture. That was put out, that was published in 1944, and it ends, that's a book you would use in school. It ends by, he never started a fight, but he never turned away from one. So this is the school telling you that his violence was acceptable in certain circumstances.
Yes. quick question. First, I'd like to thank you very much for the variety of sources that you took for in your book and in your conference. That was very, very rich. I would like to bring you on the political aspect, actually, because you, I was a bit surprised, and I would like to have your impression on this size. We, as Francophone Quebecers, we read this and we associate very much Maurice Richard with Quebecois nationalism. But I would like to basically have your impression. I was very much surprised with, not that I'm a Pat Quinn fan, but I was very much surprised with the Pat Quinn quote about Maurice Richard as a symbol of Canadian nationalism and the way that he portrays Maurice Richard. So what is your take on this statement? Is it a rare example of Maurice Richard as a symbol of Canadian nationalism, or does that occur a lot from what you've seen?
I've been working way too long on Maurice Richard. I've been gathering stuff for 30 years. So what I'm looking for now are things that I haven't seen before. And this is one of the things I haven't seen before and anywhere else. This is the only quote I could give you about that kind of nationalism directly related to the Queen. This is how it was phrased in that quote. I haven't seen any other instances of such a discourse. So this is really one way of saying it. I don't know where it comes from. I mean, when you look for things that are like this, very rare, you try to relate them to other things. You say, well, this is strange, but let's make sense of this. I'll give you a different example, and I'll come back to Pat Quinn afterwards. The very, not the very best, one of the most interesting texts about Maurice Richard was written by William Faulkner, the novelist. He was sent from Sports Illustrated, the second issue of Sports Illustrated, to the Madison Square Garden. Guy comes from Tennessee or Mississippi. He says, go and watch a hockey game. Doesn't have a clue, doesn't know what is hockey. And he comes back with a totally different reading from everyone else. You would see Maurice Richard depicted as a horse, as a lion, as a bear. Strong animal. Faulkner says, he's a deadly snake. See? And then when I read Faulkner, I say, well, this is the kind of comparisons he makes. Let's use this with other comparisons and let's try and make sense of this. I can't do this with Pat Quinn's quote, because I don't have anything quite like it. The other quotes I mentioned are from a totally different era. What Lawrence Martin does is that he says, you know, he's like Pierre Elliott Trudeau, so he's comparing him to someone from the 60s, not from someone related to England. So this is very strange. This is why I wanted to quote it, but I can't really make much of it in the state of the documentation I have now. I mean, I may find things elsewhere, but for example, this is something that never shows up in Foran's book, which is, of course, a nationalist reading of Maurice Richard. He's trying to show him as an extraordinary Canadian for all Canadians. And Foran, at the end of his book, says, well, he's part of my own, of my personal history. I had uncles who spoke nothing but French, and when I spoke with them, and I tried to speak with them, they would speak about Maurice Richard. So there's a personal story linked to the national story. Things are related that way. But the Pat Quinn story, I can't make anything of it yet.
Hi. Thank you very much for this lecture. It was very interesting. And I was curious for your thoughts on this fact I was reading recently that Maurice Richard was nearly traded to the Rangers early on in his career. And I was curious how you think the story would be different if that had happened.
Well, there are many stories, actually. There was one picture that you would see in many books about Maurice Richard where he wears a Toronto Maple Leaf sweater. That's not a real picture. They just put two pictures together. So and many times people would say, well, he was almost traded, or we should trade him. And, of course, what's interesting is not so much the fact that he could have been traded. It's the story people make of this. How would it have been different? And, of course, it would have been totally different because he would have been in a totally different environment. In a way, he would have been in a totally different city. But he would have been surrounded by other Canadians. This is something we should never lose track of. He was playing against Canadian players. Even if they were in the States, there were Canadian players playing one against the other. He would have been exposed to a different kind of media attention. He would, of course, have been deprived of all the nationalist dimension he has in Quebec. It would have been a totally different story. What is interesting is the fact that people wonder about that story. What could have happened? It would come back every year with Toronto. You know, the owner of the Maple Leafs would say, well, I'll offer you $100,000. He would come the next year saying, well, I'll offer you $125,000, which was huge money for that time. But for today, it's about inconceivable that he could have been traded. But the thing is, he could easily have been traded during his first year because he was injured so much. See, the book I wrote is not a biography. This is actually the first line of the book. This is not a biography. I'm not really interested in Maurice Richard's life. Not much. I'm interested really in the stories we make of Maurice Richard's life. How the same event can be told over and over again with different meanings. So he could have been traded, that would have meant that and that. This is really interesting, and this is why, in my mind, he is a myth. Because you can say things about a figure like that that are obviously false, that are not true, simply not true, and believe them very strongly. On March the 11th, 1996, they closed down the old forum. They were carrying the torch. He was the last one to take the torch. He got a standing ovation. How long was it? Go on YouTube. It lasts about 7 minutes. 8, 9, 10, 12, 16. I went to see an exhibition last Saturday in Old Montreal. There was this huge poster on March 11, 1996, standing ovation of 16 minutes. 20 minutes. All of these stories are true. They're all false. But people do believe them. I was there. It lasted 16 minutes. It lasted 20 minutes. No. You can time it. It's 6 minutes, 53 seconds, or 59. So this is what is interesting. People invest so much in those stories. They say, I was there. I attended. The number of people who were there on March 17, 1955 is astounding. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of people who say, I was there that night. There were 15,000 seats in the forum, so they couldn't be that many people. But this is why it's a myth. You invest meaning in that story. You try to make sense of that story. You compare those stories with other people, and then you pass on those stories. And this is why it's so important that the family setting of this transmission has to be depicted. For me, it's capital. This is where you build a myth. You build by transmitting stories. You tell stories to your children, and they tell stories to their own children, and this is why Maurice Richard is still there. Even though, like Pascal said, even though you can pinpoint the actual story that makes you believe in that in such and such narrative, there are so many stories around you that you feel that you know Maurice Richard. So this is what I work with, those narratives.
Yeah, I saw a picture in hockey research of a picture of taken out of La Presse. It was in French, and it showed a picture of the punchline. Mm-hmm. Now, the punchline, everybody saw, yeah, it was Maurice Richard in the punchline. But he wasn't there at the beginning. There was a guy named Joe Benoit. Mm-hmm. It's funny, your name is Benoit, but called him Benoit.
Yeah, of course.
You know, because he was from Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. But he left to go to the war. That was a story in that article. And it's ironic that the punchline would be someplace where a belligerent guy like Maurice Richard would be a member of. But they were all the top scorers. And Benoit was too. So I'm wondering, why did Maurice Richard go on the punchline? Because he wasn't a good hockey player in 1943. This was, the second or third year before he became any kind of a hockey player. So Elmer Lack was one of them. He's the only guy alive. My question is simple. Have you ever talked to Elmer Lack about his history? Because he's in Montreal, and
no,
I understand he's old.
But see, this is something I decided very early on in my work. I don't want to be dealing directly with these players or people related to the story. What I want to do is see how the story is transmitted. So I'm interested in Elmer Lack because of the picture taken on April 4th, 1953, when Elmer Lack scored a goal. It was in overtime during the playoffs, and he jumps into Maurice Richard's arms. Both hockey sticks go like this, V of victory. Maurice Richard breaks Elmer Lack's nose. This is not a story that interests me. That's a picture.
Yeah.
Because then, in Le Devoir, in the year 2000, they start a series. What are the 8 most important pictures taken in the history of Quebec? And this is the first picture they use. See, I'm interested in the way people try to understand the relation between Lack and Richard, not as hockey players, as characters in a story, in a narrative. And the way pictures are treated in this regard is fabulous. There's one picture, I don't think I've shown it. It's the most often used picture of Maurice Richard, where you see Maurice Richard with his eyes bulging. It's a picture taken by David Byer of the Gazette in the 50s. This is the picture everybody uses today. I have a collection of, I have dozens of pictures of Maurice Richard. This is the one we use. But in the 50s, there was another picture of Maurice Richard that was used a lot, where you see another, totally different Maurice Richard, totally in control. He's breaking, he's skating. He controls the puck, he controls his stick. He looks very posed, very quiet, very calm. And the other picture is determination, the eyes bulging, craziness. And over the years, one picture was chosen over the other one. So I'm not, whether Maurice Richard was crazy or not, is not an issue with me. I want to understand why, at one point in history, it was decided, it was not someone who decided this all by himself. But why did the media, at one point, decided this is the most interesting picture of Maurice Richard? This is the picture that depicts in the most clear way what he was. And this is the picture with his eyes bulging. So this is what when I'm looking at historical events, like the way the punchline was created, I'm looking at how the story was told, with what means, with pictures, with movies, with sculptures, with products, and with events. Maurice Richard, when he became the leading scorer in the history of the Canadiens, was honored on the ice at the Old Forum. He was given a car. He was given a vacuum cleaner. I mean, these are things that I want to make sense of. Was he the best player ever to have played in the national team? Was he the best ever goal scorer? These are things that we could discuss, you know, for hours without coming to any conclusion. But I think we can come to conclusions about a certain number of events and how they are told, or how the stories are made of these events.
Came to our banquet. There was 40, 50 of us. And he stayed all night and ate chicken with us, talked with us, signed autographs, and he was happy to be there. He was a superstar. He was still the leading scorer in the NHL at the time. But he took the time to come all the way from the East End to come out to Shady, spend the night with 40 or 50 Anglophone kids, 7 or 8 years old, and gave his time to us. I mean, that was the classiest. I can't explain how I feel about something like that. He gave a superstar someone of his stature to do the same thing today. It's just not going to happen. I still have his autograph. I cherish it. I still have the little calendar with our chicken and our apple pie and ice cream. And he signed the bottom of it. And he stayed there and talked to us. He was glad to be there. He stayed till the last gunfire.
One of the questions I'm asked quite often is this: is there, could we have today a similar figure as Maurice Richard or other sports figure from the past in this day and age? And I don't think so, for a number of reasons. One reason is pure physicality. Those players are totally different. I mean, Michael Jordan can levitate. We can't do that. And you see those people play, you say, well, I can't play like this. It's impossible. They're too well trained. They're really inaccessible in that sense. That's one reason why I don't think there are any more mythical figures. The other reason is the fact that we know everything from these people. You know literally what happens in Patrick Roy's bedroom. This is over the news. And you know it from very early on. We used to know, people used to know lots about Maurice Richard, but there was still a distance. Just enough distance so that you could identify with him, but that you would also not know a number of things about him. You know everything about sports figures today. And of course, another difference that puts sports figures away from us is money. You could still relate to Maurice Richard when he was making 4 times your salary. You can't relate with someone who earns $8 million a year to play hockey. He's living on a different planet. So I think he was one of the last figures to be invested of such a number of traits that you could turn him in, that would make him a myth. I don't think we could find any figure close to that today. People, hockey players today, don't give out autographs. They sell them. And Mario Lemieux is well known for selling his autograph because he could then control the number of cards, his number of autographs, and the value of those autographs. Maurice Richard was on a different planet for these things. So, see, you have your story about someone you could meet and you could talk to for a full evening, and he was from far away but not too far away. He was close but not too close. We're in a different era totally for sports figures. There's a game on.
On va se rendre à l'évidence, il y a un événement qui nous empêche d'aller plus loin. Alors, au nom du
a game I should be attending.
Yeah, alors je précise que Benoît avait un billet.
Ticket for tonight.
Il a préféré être des nôtres. Il avait un engagement.
Oui.
On le remercie énormément. Oui. Merci beaucoup, Benoît Melançon, pour cette conférence extrêmement intéressante. Merci.
Merci.
Je vous invite à rester des nôtres. Le match suivra. La projection sera...